to the Mishnah. We're just gonna back up a little bit for the benefit of those who weren't. No, Baruch Hashem, it's quite an accomplishment. Just for the benefit of those who maybe weren't by the shir, just so we get in a full block. No one should say that I'm cheating you out of anything. So we'll say. So with that, let's just begin very quickly. It'll go from the last three lines on Chaf Amud Beis. So v'ikidamasni la'ahav. So remember again. The Gemara was in the midst of a discussion with Rabbi Yehuda, Abai, and Rabbi Bar Chama. So there are some who go ahead and frame the conversation as dealing with the following. If somebody rents a home to his friend, and the home is afflicted with tzara'as. So afa pisha chaltu bo kohen. Even though ultimately, again, the kohen goes ahead and declares it impure, nevertheless, The owner could say to the renter, no, it's your mazel. You have a home in front of you. I am not obligated to go ahead and provide you with another domicile. Look at Rashi for just a moment. Remember, chaltu means make a decisive statement. Even though the kohen went ahead and decisively declared that the house is tamei, the omeid linatates. And remember again, once the kohen declares the house tamei, the only real recourse ultimately is to go ahead and deconstruct the home, to demolish the home. Calls manshalonas, so omer lo maskila socher, harishal chalafanecha. As long as the home itself is still standing, even though effectively it's been condemned, so halacha lemaisa, the owner could say to the renter, the home is there, live in it as you please. Because at the end of the day, I have no obligation to go out and rent you another home. Thank you so much. Because the home that I provided you is still standing. However, nasu, once the home itself is demolished, chayiv la'amot lo bayis, la'amid lo bayis. And at that point in time, once the home has been demolished, then halacha lamaisa, the owner is obligated to provide the renter with another domicile. Look at Rashi. Naso kohen, chayiv masker la'amid bayis achel l'socher. Once the house has been demolished, then ultimately, again, the owner is obligated to provide the renter with another home. The mishum mazle de masker hu, shenechshad ala gezel, O alt saras ayin. We had this gemara a few days ago, that ultimately, again, we view the demolition of the home as a result of tzaras to be related ultimately, again, to the mazel of the owner. Why does this is actually quite interesting, because Rashi in Chumash indicates to us that tzaras habatim was a din in what? Was a din in good fortune, good mazel, right? There was treasure buried behind the walls. But we saw the gemara last week, that ultimately, again, that it could also be a sign of tzarasayin. It could be a sign of stinginess. It could be a sign of theft. That if a person keeps everything for themselves, ultimately, again, a Kodesh Baruch Hu takes their home away from them. Point over here is, according to this Gemara, is we assume it's the mazel of the owner that caused the tzaras, and therefore the owner is obligated to furnish the renter with another suitable dwelling place. Top of Chaf Aleph. Hekdisho. We'll say, what happens if halacha lemaisa, he was makdish the home? Hadar bo ma'ale schar lehekdish. Ultimately, again, I will say, now the way this sounds like it reads is, if he was makdish the home, then one who lives in the home ultimately pays the rent to hekdish. Hekdisho, hadar bo, hechi matzi makdish lo. So I don't understand. What does that mean? So we'll say, the way the Gemara is understanding this is, Higdishu Adarbo, that if the person living in the home was Makdish the home, which sounds like the renter was Makdish the home, he pays the rent to Hekdish. Well, how could a renter be Makdish a home? After all, Ish Kiyakdish Beso, Kodesh Amrachmana, Ma Beso Bishuso, Afkol Bishuso. I will say, there's a very important halacha when it comes to Hekdish. You know, you can only be makdish your own stuff, right? Can you imagine what this would look like, right? I'm feeling especially generous. I like to be makdish your car, right? I'm makdish your car. It's not, that's the kind of guy I am. As well as, obviously, you can't have such a concept like that. Ish ki yakdish beso. Ultimately, again, the only time you have the opportunity or ability to makdish something is when it is yours. Therefore, if I'm renting a home, I have absolutely no ability to be makdish that home to the base of mikdash. Hachi kamar, this is what it means to say. Higdisha maskir, that ultimately, again, if the owner of the home was makdish his home, then hadar bo ma'ales chal hegdish. Then ultimately, the one who lives in it has to pay his rent to the Beis HaMikdash. Says the Gemara, heichi dayir, but I don't understand. If I'm makdish my home to the Beis HaMikdash, then how could anyone live in that home? After all, what would that be? B'me'ilakai, ultimately, we'll say, if I'm makdish my home, and someone then lives in that house, that is a problem with me'ila. To which the Gemara says, v'su, ma'alis chala hegdish. Furthermore, again, we'll say, it's actually quite interesting. Even if it was just, let's play this out. I'm the owner of the home. I'm makdish my home. Someone's now living in the home. So now the Bryce is saying he has to pay the rent to the Beis HaMikdash. There's two problems. Number one is that the act of living in the home constitutes an act of what? Of me'ila. That's number one. Number two, so the interesting part about me'ila is when you are mo'il in something, right? When you commit an act of me'ila, the act of me'ila removes the item from the Beis HaMikdash into chulin, into a mundane status. We'll say the truth is, that's not unique to Me'ila. We find that concept where, in general, by theft, what happens when you steal something? We'll say this is actually quite interesting. One of the intriguing aspects of theft is there's a quasi-ownership that occurs when you steal something, right? When you go in and you steal something, you, to a certain degree, you become the bailim over it. Same thing with me'ila. When you commit an act of me'ila, effectively what you've done is you've stolen from the Beis HaMikdash, but through the act of stealing, you have become the owner of the object, which means if I were to live in a home, use a home that is owned by the Beis HaMikdash, I have committed me'ila, but interestingly enough, the rent amount is no longer kodesh. The rent amount actually now becomes chulin. To which the Gemara says, the Amar, so what's the case? The Amar, the Chishayavo Scharo Yikdash. We'll say the case over here is actually where the owner of the property was not makdish the property. Instead, what happens? He says like this, I have a house, I'm renting my house to Reuven. And I say, Reuven, when it comes time to pay your rent, so Alocha L'maisa, I'm hereby consecrating the future rent payments, right? When you pay me rent, that rental payment will become kodesh. I v'ha in adam makdish darish shalom bali olam. But here's the problem. You're consecrating something that does not yet exist, right? Halacha l'mayis, again, the rental payment doesn't exist. I'm being makdish future payments. And we normally assume that you can't be makdish something that has not come into existence. I will say now, again, the concept of in adam makdish darish shalom bali olam is not a unique din by kodesh. It's actually a transactional concept that normally we hold that in halacha in general, you cannot transact with things that do not yet exist. It's no different in hekdish than it is with business. We've seen this concept before. Rav Yehuda Amar Rav, Haman Rabbi Meir hi. So Rabbi say, whose opinion does this reflect? It reflects the view of Rabbi Meir. The Amar Adam Makdish Davar Shalab Al Yolam. Rabbi say, Rabbi Meir is of the opinion that in fact you can be Makdish something that does not yet exist. And therefore again, Rabbi say, that will be the case of the Braisa, where again, I have a home, I'm renting my home to Reuven. I say, Reuven, the future rental payments that you pay will be Kodesh. It's a Davar Shalab Al Yolam. He holds like Rabbi Meir, who holds Adam Makdish Davar Shalom Bali Olam. Igadam will say an alternate version of this. Amrali Rav Papa La Abayi, Amrali Rav Mari, Barcham of Rav Chista, Kiman, Ki Rabbi Meir. Whose opinion does this reflect? Like Rabbi Meir, the Amr Adam Makdish Davar Shalom Bali Olam. Because Rabbi Meir holds that a person can consecrate something that does not yet exist. Amrali, the Ela Kiman. So we'll say, he says to him, of course, who else could it be like? So just a different version of the same previous discussion, but ultimately still leading back to the Shita of Rabbi Meir, who holds that Adam is makdish davar shalah bali olam. Beautiful. Mishnah. We'll say very interesting Mishnah. Vlasi, they're all interesting Mishnahs, but this is especially intriguing. Chai ve'erchin b'mashkin osanam. We'll say this is actually quite fascinating. Let's say somebody makes an erech vow. Again, simba erech vow. Erki alai, I pledge my value. I'm a male between the ages of 20 and 60. I pledge my value. We'll say, what's the halach when I pledge my value? Ultimately, again, the Beis HaMikdash sends a representative to take a mashkin, right? To come and to seize property to collateralize my erchin debt. Okay? So the Gemara says, look at Rashi. Sorry. So, chai bechatos. Let me tell you this. So, the logic over here is as follows. We're going to now get into a discussion about when the Beis HaMikdash seizes collateral for something. And essentially what happens is as follows. Lav dafka that the Beis HaMikdash does seize collateral, but they can seize collateral. The Beis HaMikdash could seize collateral any time where there's a concern that I am not going to pay my debt. When we're not concerned, when the Beis HaMikdash is confident that I'm going to pay my debt, they don't seize collateral. The Bible says we're going to see when it... Now, based on that. Chayvi erechim ashkenosa. The Bible says, now listen to this. If I make an erech vow, Beis Din seizes collateral. They can seize collateral. On the flip side, chayvi chatos v'ashamos im mashkenin osan. It will say, if I'm chayvi chatas or an asham, they do not seize collateral. What's the chilek over here? If I'm chayvi chatas or an asham, the Beis HaMikdash is not worried about me fulfilling my obligation. Why? I want kapara. Because I want atonement. I have a vested interest in bringing those karbanos, because without those karbanos, I cannot achieve a level of atonement. As such, there's no concern that I'm going to be derelict in my responsibilities to carry through. So contrast this with erchin, right? If I make an erchin vow, so I have an obligation to carry out. But what happens if I don't carry out, or I delay in carrying out? What's the ramification on me? None, really. In other words, I'm in violation potentially of Motzah, Svasach, a Tishmar. There's a concept of ultimately honoring your word, but I'm going to honor my word. I'm just taking my time in doing it. So technically speaking, I don't suffer, meaning there's no adverse impact on me if I delay fulfilling my Erechin vow. That's when the Beis HaMikdash says, we're going to bless you. We're going to seek collateral in order to make sure that you fulfill your debt. But on things where there's no concern that I'm going to be derelict because I need the kapara, Beis Din does not seize mashkin. So, Achataz Hashem's a mashkin olson. Chayvi olos u'shlamim. When it comes to chayvi olos and shlamim, mimashkin in olson, ultimately Beis Din does seize mashkin. Alpha P, Shabbosai. So again, same idea, an ola and a shlamim, one would be bringing it for non-sin purposes, most times. Therefore, for non-sin purposes, there's a concern that a person is not going to carry through on their obligation. Now, the important caveat over here is that halacha lemaisa, even though Beis Din could seize collateral for the olos and the shlamim, you cannot offer up the olos and shlamim on behalf of the olos and shlamim cannot be offered up on behalf of the owner, unless, of course, the owner expresses his will. Shene'emar liritzono, because the pasuk says that he only offered up liritzono in accordance with his will. However, kofin oso ad shiyoma rotzani. Rabbo says sometimes you could beat a person up, you could force him until ultimately he says, I comply. In other words, Rabbo says this is based v'chinata omer begite noshim kofin oso ad shiyoma rotzani. Rabbo says we know this concept, right? By gittin, that halacha lamaisa, you could force a person until he says, I comply. Rabbo says this is based on a very important concept, which is people at their core are good. Just some people need the good beaten out of them, right? Some people need the good forced out of them. They'll say everybody at the end of the day wants to do the right thing. No, really, on a serious level, this is what this halachic concept is predicated on. People want to be good. People want to do the right thing. But we don't do the right thing for a variety of different reasons. And sometimes there needs to be an element of compulsion that's applied in order to get a person to do the right thing. So interestingly enough, you can't offer up an ola or a shlomo on behalf of the owner without the owner's will. Just sometimes you are permitted to force that will. Same thing by a get. We assume that a man wants to do the right thing and not make his wife an aguna. Sometimes you have to push him in order to ultimately get him to do that right thing. Says the Gemara. Bosse, here we go. Come to a very interesting sugya here. Amra Papa. Pamim shechayve chatos memashkinin osan. Chayve olos emashkinin osan. Bosse, now remember again. So just so you appreciate the model in the Mishnah. The model of the Mishnah was that for a chayve chatos, we don't seize collateral. Why don't we seize collateral? Chayve chatos. Because we assume that a person wants the kapara. They don't have to be forced. Olos and shlomim, on the other hand, we do seize collateral because a person needs a bit more of a push to do it. Rapapu just says, by the way, there are some times where for chayve chatos, you do take mashkin, and chayve olos in mashkin and osan. What are the cases? Chayve chatos mashkin and osan. And we'll say, what would be a case whereby a chatos, you would seize collateral? Which means, what's the case of the chatos, where we are concerned that a person is not going to do the right thing and delay bringing their karban? Bechatos nazir. Rabbosei, the example would be in the case of the chatos of a nazir. Why? Techevan da amar mar, listen to this. im gilach al achas mishlashtan yatsa vim nizrak al echad min adamim chuter hanazir lishtos yayin or time of the mason. Now listen to this. Take a look at Rashi. It's the first Rashi in the Gemara. Mishlashtan. Rashi says, Chatas o oloshlan. And I remember, understand, a nazir brings three karbanos. A nazir brings a chatas, an ola, and the shlamim. The gimel karbanos ksuvin bo, varmina bis sifrei debeira, v'achar yishta a nazir yayin, achar masi yechidu. But listen to this. So a nazir has to bring a chatas, an ola, and a shlamim. But talocha is that as soon as he brings one of those karbanos, essentially what? The restrictions of the Nazirus are lifted. So for example, if a Nazir brought his Ola or his Shlamim, he's pretty much good to go. Now he's still, meaning when I say good to go, is he can go to a Levaya, yay Nazir, right? He can drink wine, all the restrictions are lifted. But Aloch Lamaise still has karbonic liability upon his shoulders. So Rav Papa says, this would be an example where we would seize collateral in order to get the Nazir to bring his chatas. Why? Because in this case, we would be concerned that he would be derelict in his obligation to bring the chatas. Why? Why? Because effectively, he has no... This sounds strange. He has no incentive to do it. Because pretty much the restrictions of Nazirus have been lifted upon him. And therefore we have a significant concern that he's just going to not fulfill his obligation. So Rav Papa just points out, even though the Mishnah seems to indicate to us that we never seize collateral. We never seize collateral for a chatos. There is a case where we seize collateral for a chatos. Next, so the Gemara says, Pasha Bevlamaisi, Chayvi Olosei Mashkin Osan. So we'll say, yet interesting enough, the Mishnah said that for Olos, we do seize Mashkon, right? Because again, remember, in Ola, there's not a Kapara element, and therefore, Aloch Lamaisi, we're concerned the person can be derelict. Rav Papa says there are sometimes where even for an Ola, we will seize. Excuse me, we don't seize Mashkin, which means Rabbi said that there's a case of an Ola where we're confident that what? That the person who is obligated is going to bring it on their own without seizing collateral. What's that case? Ba'olas yoledes. Rabbi said that is with the Ola of a woman who gives birth. Rashi says, Ba'olas yoledes, delo mishtaria bakachim ad demasyola, because ultimately the woman who gives birth is not permitted to partake of kachim until ultimately again she brings this ola. So the Gemara says, "I v'hamar Rava lemikrek dimakasuv." But yet Rava said that's not true. The ultimately again, the only reason that the ola is mentioned, it's mentioned first in the pasuk, but it does not mean that she cannot partake of kachim until she brings the ola. If that's the case, what's the case of ola where we would not go ahead and seize collateral? Ella ba'olas mitzora. Rather, Rabbi Osei, it's the case of the Olas Mitzora. The same Rabbi Osei, first wide line, Chafalef Amud Aleph. The same Rabbi Shmuel Menosh Rabbi Yehuda Ben Baroka Omer, Keshem Shechatoso V'ashamo Ikafto, Kach Olaso Ikafto. Rabbi Osei, Keshem Rabbi Shmuel saying, that what? The same way by Mitzora, his Chatos and his Asham is Ma'akev, so too his Ola is Ma'akev. So because Rabbi Osei, by the Mitzora, his Ola is Ma'akev, therefore what? We are not concerned that he will be derelict in bringing it, and therefore, again, there is no need to go ahead and seize collateral. So we'll say, what comes out of here is as follows, that under normal circumstances, halacha lemaisa, when it comes to Beis HaMikdash liability, we will only seize collateral in a situation where we are concerned that a person is not going to carry through on their obligation, like an erech vow, like an ola, like shlamim. But by circumstances where a person needs their karban to affect a change in status, in that case, again, there is no need for the seizure of collateral because we're confident that a person wants that kapara. Or, Rav Papa points out, is there are exceptions to the rule. There are cases of chatas where you will seize collateral, like by the nazir, because technically speaking, he doesn't, quote-unquote, need the chatas. And there will be cases of ola where you don't seize collateral. Like, for example, the Ola of Mitzora, where the bringing of that Ola is an absolute necessity to his purification process. Good. Interestingly enough, see, here's the chab. Obviously, if you're seizing collateral, what are you effectively doing? What are you doing? You are forcing the person to bring his Ola, to bring his Shlamim. So the Mishnah says, although the seizure of collateral works, at the end of the day, you actually can't offer up the Ola or the Shlamim on his behalf until Allah Kalamaisa, he agrees. Why? Tan Rabbanan, Yakriv also. So we'll say the pasuk says Yakriv also. He shall offer it up. Melamed shekofen also teaches us that we could force someone to bring his carbon. Yochol ba karcho. You might have thought that means you could even force him to do it against his will. Tamid lomar liritzono. Therefore, the pasuk is in accordance with this. Also, I have seen two seemingly contradictory drushas. Yakriv also teaches me I could force someone to bring their carbon. Liritzono teaches me that what? It has to be in accordance with his will. So which one is it? Haketzad, kofen also, achiyomerotzani. You could force him until he says, yes, how did you know? Right? You've discovered my inner ratzon. I really want to bring this carbon. Amr Shmuel. Shmuel says, ola tzvicha das. Shmuel says that in general, an ola requires das. Says the Gemara Shneimar liritzono. Because the pasuk says the carbon has to be offered in accordance with the will of the offerer. My kamash balan. Why is this teaching us? Tani, we already learned this in the Mishnah. Afa pishe miskapelo achi isratze shneimar liritzono. Plus, we already learned this in the Mishnah that an ola requires das. While it is true that you could seize collateral in order to force the person to offer up the carbon, halacha lemaisa, you could only offer up the carbon when it is clear that it has the consent of the offerer, to which the Gemara says, Lo tzicha de parish lechare. Well, listen to this interesting case. What's the situation over here? Where my friend offered up a carbon on my behalf. Look at Rashi. Da'afrish lechavero, shayezeh chayevola, uba chavero ve'efrisha mishalo lekaparaso shalzeh. The Ka'amar Shmuel, de ba'inan sheyodia es hamiskaper. Supposed to listen to this. What's the situation? I am chayev an ola. My friend comes along and separates out and offers up an ola on my behalf. Shmuel's coming along to teach me that what? That even in that case where my friend does it on my behalf, it doesn't work unless I consent to it and know about it. Or know about it and consent to it. So the Gemara says, what's the chiddush? Ma'u detema ki ba'inan das mididay. Ava midichabri lo bosa amartor as follows. When do we say liratzon, right? When do we say, or liratzono, that halacha lemaisa, you can only offer up the ola on my behalf? Right, when is that? Only when Beis Din is seizing my property. If Beis Din seizes my property and offers up that carbon, liratzono teaches me that halacha lemaisa, it only works if I consent. But if my friend is doing it on my behalf, he's helping me out, discharging my obligation for me, I might have thought that I don't have to quote-unquote consent to that. It doesn't need to be a liritzono, but he could offer it up on my behalf. So the Gemara says, so kamash malon, no. Kamash malon, both say that even when my friend offers it up on my behalf, it only works if what? If what? If I know about it and consent to it. Why, both listen to this. Zimnin delone chale delechapren bemide delodide. Because I will say, sometimes people do not want to affect their atonement with stuff that does not belong to them. In other words, if I require kapara through the offering of this carbon, I prefer to have that carbon offered up from my property, not necessarily from my friend's property. Therefore, even if my friend is being a good friend and separating out an ola on my behalf, it only works if he informs me and I consent. Look at Rashi. Mididay, kigon heichad de beisim amashkin and also tzar shiuma rotzani. So we'll say, so what comes out according to the Gemara over here is as follows, that halacha lemaisa, in any situation where a carbon is being offered on my behalf, it only works if what? If I am informed and if I consent. That is true whether Beis Din is seizing collateral from me and offering up that carbon, or my friend is doing it on my behalf. Either way, halacha lemaisa, in order for it to work, I have to know about it and I have to consent. Meisveis, and what is the kasha? Chatas ovasha, mosha ploni alai. Well, so listen to this interesting case. I go ahead, I'm a nice guy, I say, you know what, I'm going to offer the chatas and the asham of ploni. Reuven is chayv in the chatas and an asham. I take upon that liability upon myself to offer his chatas and his asham. Plusha ploni alai. So we'll say, amud beis, ledas yatza, shalo ledas lo yatza. If ploni knows about it and consents, then it works. If he doesn't know about it, thank you, or doesn't consent, then it doesn't work. Yet, olasa ushlamav shel ploni alai. But I will say, if I pledge to offer up the ola right, the Ola and Shlamim of Ploni, right, I agree to offer it up. Bein Ladas, Bein Shelo Ladas Yatza. Whether Ploni knows about it or doesn't know about it, it works. So we'll say, you understand the obvious contradiction. We just got finished saying before that what? That Liritzono teaches me that when it comes to an Ola and a Shlamim, so Halacha L'Maisa, again, it only works if the person knows about it. That is true whether Bezin is offering up the carbon or whether I'm offering up the carbon on behalf of my friend. Bryce clearly contradicts that and says no. The Bryce over here says, we'll say that it's only a Chatas or an Asham where Ploni has to know about it. But for an Ola and the Shlamim, whether Ploni knows about it or doesn't know about it, it'll work. So what's going on over here? Amar Lecha Shmuel, Shmuel will say, Kitanya hi b'shas kapara. So say, look at Rashi, Kitanya hi delo ba'inan das bailim b'shas hakrava tanya deha hodio b'shas hafrasha. So we'll say Shmuel says like this. When do we say that halacha lemaisa you did not require the das bailim? We'll say when is that? That's b'shas akrava. We'll remember again, there are two different stages in this karbon. There's the time that the animal is separated out for the particular offering, and there is the time that it is actively offered. So Shmuel says, when does the braisa say that if you're going to offer up an ola and the shlamin, that the owner doesn't have to know about it? That's only b'shas hakrava, when it's being offered. In other words, according to Shmuel, what Shmuel is suggesting is that the Brice is teaching me, when halacha lemaisa, when the person who has the carbonic liability was notified at the time of hafrasha, at the time the carbon was offered, even if he's not subsequently notified, I'm sorry, if the person who is chayv in the carbon, I'm separating out a carbon for Ruvain, right? So as long as I tell Ruvain at the time when the carbon was separated that I'm separating this carbon on his behalf, even if I don't subsequently notify him when, at the time that it is offered, it is okay. So we'll say, so this is the distinction that Shmuel is making. When it comes to a chatas and an asham, the person on whose behalf I'm offering it must be fully in the know. Fully, we'll discuss what fully means in just a moment. When it comes to Shlamim, Ola and Shlamim of Ploni, as long as he is told about it when? At the time the carbon was separated. Even if he's not informed at the time that the carbon is offered, that is good enough. So, Kitani b'shas kapara, the irtsi b'shas hafrasha, ki kamina ana b'shas hafrasha. So, ultimately, we'll say, when is this price of stating that the individual does not need to know about the carbon? That's at the shas kapara, when it's actually being offered. The irtsi b'shas hafrasha, ultimately, again, he knew about it at the time that the carbon was separated. Ki kamina ana b'shas hafrasha. Shmuel said, when did I say originally that the owner has to be in the know? That's at the time that the carbon was separated. So by an ola and the shlamim, as long as the owner knows when the animal was separated and he consented to the animal being separated on his behalf, he does not need to subsequently be notified when the animal is offered up as a carbon. Upliga to ula. And what's this argues on ula? Because what does ula say? Da'amar ula, lo chilku bein chatas the ola. Ula says in general, there is no distinction between a chatas and an ola. Ela shechatas tzricha das b'shas hafrasha, va'ola ein tzricha das b'shas hafrasha. Because ula says that what? A chatas, the owner has to be notified at the time that the animal was separated. But in ola, ultimately, again, the owner does not require to be informed at the time that the animal was separated. Aval b'shas kapara, but it was at the time that the animal is actually offered up. Idi v'idi ladas yotza, shelo ladas lo yotza. We'll say, so ula is of the opinion that halacha lemaisa, the distinction between a chatas and an ola is as follows. A chatas, you must be informed at the time that the animal was separated. An ola, you do not require that you be informed at the time that it's separated. But for both types of karbanos, you must be informed at the time that it was offered up. So we'll say fundamental machlokes between ula and Shmuel. Ula requires informed consent at the time that the animal is offered up. So that's Ula. Shmuel does not require that. Shmuel halacha lemaaseh says, as long as you know that the animal was separated and you give your consent, then you need not give additional consent when it was offered up. Mesve chatasova shamo. Olas oshlam shaploni alai. Let's look at this braisa. Chatas and an asham ola and shlamim of ploni I take upon myself to offer up. So we'll say I'm offering to give the karbanos of my friend on his behalf. So what's the halacha? Ledas yotza. As long as Reuven knows about it, he's yotze. Shelo ledas lo yotza. If he doesn't know about it, he's not yotze. Shmuel mukila b'shas hafrasha. So Shmuel says, Rabbi, say, when do you need informed consent? According to Shmuel, at the time when the carbon is separated, Ula mukila b'shas kapara. And Ula says, when do you need informed consent? Rabbi say, when? At shas kapara, the time of atonement, which means what? The time that the animal is offered. Amra papa, masnisa ahadadi lokashon. The papa says, the truth is, the mishnayos do not contradict each other. Habishas kapara, habishas hafrasha. They're talking about two different states. One is talking about the time of kapara, the time when it's offered. One is talking about the time when it is separated. Vamurai, nami lokasha, and both say the Amurama are also not contradicting each other. Shmuel muki kamaisa bishas kapara. Shmuel establishes the earlier braisa talking about the shas kapara. Basraisa bishas hafrasha. And the later Mishnah, the later braisa is talking about the time when it is set, when it's offered up. Ula mukila ipcha. And Ula will go ahead and arrange the braisos exactly the opposite. Amorai vadei pligi. But the Amorai involved over here are certainly arguing on one another. To which the Gemara says, Pshita, that's obvious. Maudetem, what would you have thought? Bishas hafrasha de ka'amar Shmuel, af bishas hafrasha. I might have thought that when Shmuel says shas hafrasha, he really means what? Even the shas hafrasha. Even the shas hafrasha. Va'af agav dahach kaima. And even though ultimately again, even though again, about say this earlier one ultimately seems to refute that, kamashwan not like that. So we'll say, so aloch lamaisa, we're left off with a fundamental machlokes regarding, ultimately this situation of when you need informed consent for when you are offering up karbanos on behalf of someone else. If I'm offering up karbanos on behalf of my friend, when do I require informed consent for this karban? So what's the machlokes, Shmuel and Ula? Do you require informed consent just b'shas hafrasha, at the time when the karban is separated, or do you require informed consent even at the time of Hakrava? That's machlokes number one. The subset of that machlokes is this obligation for informed consent, is this halacha lemaisa karban specific? Are there different halachas when it comes to an olon shlamim versus a chata? So we'll say, so I'll tell you, how does the Rambam paskin? Sorry, let me just bring this up here. How does the Rambam paskin? If I wanted to stop. How does the Rambam paskin? Let me just find this for you, excuse me. So the Rambam paskin is as follows. This is in Hilchos Maaseh HaKarbanos. So this is in Perek Yudalid Halacha Yud. So the Rambam paskin is like this. Ha'omer chataso va'olaso va'ashama ushlama v'shalploni alai. We'll say if a person goes ahead and undertakes the obligation to give the chatas, the ola, the asham, the shlamim of his friend, any one of these cases. Imratza osaploni, if the person who is obligated wants his friend to give the karbanos on his behalf, hari zemanicho lahakrivan al yodom iskaperlo, no problem. But I said there's no problem with someone offering up karbanos on my behalf. Ratza bishas hafrasha, velo ratza bishas hakrava ela chazerbo. Ba'ola ubishlamim makrivin umiskaper lo bahen af api shena rotze ata shayrotze b'shas hafrasha ava b'chatas uba'asham lo niskaper ad shiyisratze mitchila v'ad sof. So we'll say, interestingly enough, when it comes to a chatas and an asham, so the right way that Rambam paskins is you require informed consent at both stages. Chatas and asham required informed consent at the time of Hakrava, Hafrasha, and Hakrava. When you separate out the animals, and ultimately again, when you offer them up, you require both. But halacha lamaisa, when it comes to these other karbanos of ola and shlamim, as long as you have informed consent at the time of hafrasha, you do not require informed consent at the time of hakrava. So we'll say so one more time. The Rambam paskins chatas and an asham require informed consent at the time of hafrasha and hakrava. Ola and shlamim only informed consent at the time of hafrasha, not at the time of hakrava. And I will say that what I want to point out to you is the Rambam brings even a more extreme case. The Rambam's case is where I gave my consent to, let's say, Reuven, to separate out an ola and the shlama on my behalf. And then Rabbi will say, what happens? I renege in the Rambam's cases. I say, I don't want it. Don't offer it on my behalf. The Rambam paskins that as long as there was informed consent at the time of Hafrasha, Reuven could even offer up my ola and my shlamim on my behalf. That's the chiddush. We don't even need to get into such a novel case for our purposes. For our purposes today, for ola and shlamim, you need informed consent at the time of Hafrasha, and that's it. Chatas and Asham, informed consent at the time of Hafrasha, as well as at Hakrava. Good, says the Gemara. Dechein begitin Asham kofin. So let's remember again, now the Mishnah said that halacha lamaisa, I require halacha lamaisa, the same way that I could go ahead and seize collateral for karbanos, I could also seize collateral, I could also force a man to give a get to his wife. So Amar Rav Sheshes says as follows, Hai man demasra moda agita. So we'll say, moda. We'll say, if a man gives a get, and then he's what's called Moser Moda. Moser Moda, what I means that a man says, you know what, I don't give this get with a full heart. Right? I gave this get under duress, or I don't want to give this get. He's Moser Moda, meaning he gives a qualification to this get. The halacha is his Moda is effective and ultimately undermines the authenticity of the get. To which the Gemara says, Pshita, okay, fine, that's obvious. To which the Gemara says, Lotzicha, Dasua v'irtzi. I will say, what's the case? The case is where halacha l'maisa, the man goes ahead and gives a moda, right? He says, I don't want to give the get. And then what happens? We convince him to give the get. So I will say, so what's the halacha? Ma'u detema, batulei batle. The fact that he's now willing to give the get, ultimately again, so therefore the get should be good. Kamash malan, no. Kamash malan, so the Gemara says, De'imkein, listni ad sheyitein. Ma ad sheyomar, ad demivata leila modar. Rabbos says, it's very important. A modar, Rabbos, I means, when a man declares, I hereby declare that I do not want to give this get. Or I hereby declare that there's something wrong with the get. Saloch lamaisa, what happens if we convince him to give the get? I convince him to give the get. I might have thought that convincing him to give the get is enough. Kamash malan, Rabbos, I that the get will only be effective when the man says, I hereby mevatel the initial moda. You know that statement I made originally that I want to give the get? Or the statement that I was not giving the get with a complete heart? They're both saying, in order to create an effective get situation, the man has to actively be mevatel the moda. This is a very, very, very important halacha. Look at Rashi. Ma'u detema mistama batle the moda. Kamash Rav Sheshes delo. Umasnisin yalef taima de imkein listening kofin osa achitin. Rabbi says, this is incredible halacha. Very important halacha when it comes to chosgin. That if a man makes a moda, a man makes an objection, lodges an objection against the get will only be effective if he bepem mole, explicitly, is mevatel that initial moda. If he is not mevatel that initial moda, but kind of just simply says, fine, I'll give the get. That's not enough. We need him to stand up and actively say, that initial complaint that I lodged about the get, I am hereby mevatel that complaint. That complaint is hereby null and void. Now, both say tos likitosis. Haiman, look tos is right on the right hand side. Haiman demaster moda, agita modai moda. Pasak lefichach nagua olim levatal, ko modai umodai daasumigo modai bishas ksivas aget, ubishas hanasina, dechashinan shema bita also. Now, both say tos says, therefore, when a man gives a get to his wife, one of the things we do in the process of giving a get is we make the man explicitly state that if any point in time he indicated or he said that he does not want to give this get, finds something wrong with the get, made a statement that he does not want to go ahead and divorce his wife, made a statement that he was giving this get under duress, that he is mevatel all of those statements. Rabosai, halach lamaisa, we do this with getting today. Part of the process when a husband gives a get is we make him declare that if at any point in time you said you don't want to give the get, you don't want to divorce your wife, the get was being given under duress, that you are mevatel any of those statements. We'll say in that halacha lemaisa. See, even though, again, interestingly enough, even though kolfin oso achimarotzani, you can make a man give a get, you could force him to give the get until he says, fine, I'll give the get. Fine, I'll give the get is not enough, because if he made previous statements that indicated that he does not want to give the get will only be effective when, if halacha lemaisa, he's actively mevatel those previous statements. Incredible. Hadron halach, homer mishkoy, bosai mazel tov. Next parak. Shem yisom shosh yom. Bosai, interesting halacha. If Beis Din wants to sell off some property that belongs to the Yisomim, right? Let's say for whatever reason, Beis Din has to liquidate the assets of Yisomim. So Rabbosai, remember again, Beis Din doesn't, so let's say the simple case would be over here, the estate owes money to creditors. As a result, Beis Din has to liquidate the estate. You don't want to sell off property immediately like a fire sale. Why? Because then who's going to lose? The Yisomim will lose. So what do we do? If Beis Din has assessed that you have to sell off the property of the Yisomim, we let it sit on the market for 30 days. For 30 days. We give it a month to sell it off. Vishum ha-hekdish shishim yom. Similarly again, if the Beis HaMikdash is going to sell off property, we put that market, we put that property on the market for 60 days. And we announce the sale of this property, both the sale of the Yisomim's property, estate property, as well as Beis HaMikdash property, in the morning and in the evening. So we'll say it's actually quite interesting. So for 30 days, for 30 days for Yisomim, 60 days for the Beis HaMikdash, we'll say, why? Why don't you say do 60 days for the Yisomim? Why not 60 days for the Yisomim? Because remember, here's the difference. For the Beis HaMikdash, it's liquidating assets for whatever the reason, but it's usually not to satisfy creditors. There's only so long, meaning if I'm owed money by the estate of the Yisomim, so of course I don't expect Beis Din to liquidate the estate in a fire sale. That I don't expect, because why should the Yisomim lose out? On the other hand, there has to be some level of reasonability. So we give it a month, 30 days to get the best price for the property of the Yisomim. 60 days is just too long. The Beis HaMikdash could take their time with it. So for the Beis HaMikdash, 60 days for Yisomim, 30 days, and we announce the sale of the property twice a day in the morning and the evening. Says the Gemara, Maishna Baboker Uba'erev. What does that mean in the morning and the evening? Amar Avinu Marav, Bishas Hotzas Polim, Ubishas Hachnosas Polim. So Rav says, we'll say when? It's in the morning, at the time when the workers go to work, right? Where the workers go out to work. Ubishas achnasas polim. And when the workers come home from work. So the Gemara says, Bishas hotzas polim. So we announce it once in the morning when the workers go out to work. Deikadinecha lemizban. So we'll say, because what happens? If I'm in the market to buy property, I could tell my workers, listen, on your way to work, do me a favor, on the way to work, go check out that property for me. Right, on the way to the office, right, on the way to my field, go check out that property for me. See what it's all about. Bishas hachnasas polim, dinitkar din amar luhu nezel nishayle. So we'll say, and then at night they announce it again. Why? Because we'll say, let's say, the previous evening I told my worker, do me a favor, on the way to work, check out that property for me. But then I forgot to ask the worker about it. That way, you know, when they ring the bell for the end of the work day and they announce it again, it reminds me to ask my worker, tell me about that property you saw. So that supports this. Shum hayisomim shloshim yom. They both say, when assessing property of the orphans, to sell off the property, estate property, to satisfy debts, We keep the property on the market for 30 days. V'shulma hekdish shishim yom. And for the Beis HaMikdash, we keep it on the market for 60 days. U'machrizin baboker u'ba'erev. And the boss say we go ahead and we announce, right? Beis Din announces, right? So-and-so property is for sale. Estate property for sale. Beis HaMikdash property for sale. Baboker u'ba'erev. And we do this twice a day. Once in the morning, once in the evening. Why once in the morning, once in the evening? So here the Brice is more explicit. B'shas hotzas polim, u'b'shas hachnasas polim. At the time when the workers go out to their work sites, this way again, therefore, I could tell my employees, do me a favor, go look at the property. And again, when the workers are about to leave and I hear the announcement, it reminds me again to ask my workers about the property that they saw. Omer sode ploni b'simonel, u'b'meitzarel, Kach yafe v'kach yishuma. And I both say there's a fuller announcement. Beis Din announces estate property for sale, Beis HaMikdash property for sale, and they announce the particular parcel and the simanim, the details of the parcel, the boundaries of the parcel, kach yafe, the value of the parcel, kach yishuma, here's what it has been appraised at, kolarotz likach yavo v'yikach. And whoever wants to come and purchase the property, come and purchase. But understand, Amenas litein liisha b'ksuvasa, ulabalchov b'chovo. But I will say, what they would announce is, if there were outstanding debts against the parcel, they would indicate that as well. So for example, let's say you had an estate sale, but the estate still owed the woman her ksuva. So they would announce, this is the parcel, so-and-so are the boundaries, so-and-so are the simanim, so-and-so is the appraisal, right? This is the appraisal. And by the way, you also have to pay out the ksuva of a woman from this property. Or, ulabal chov b'chovo. Or if there were other creditors against the parcel, they would announce that as well. To which the Gemara says, lama li lameimar, amanas litin liisha ksuvasa, ulabal chov chovo. We'll say, why would the Beis Din have to announce if there was a ksuva obligation outstanding, or a balchov, or a creditor outstanding? So you both say, because understand, what is the Gemara asking? It's obvious that there's a creditor of some type. Why is it obvious there's a creditor of some type? Because that's why they're selling the property. You both say, again, remember, the only time business is liquidating assets, ultimately of Yisomim, is you, not only time, but usually, it's because there's a creditor. Right? So let's say, that's generally, this is not for the business, this is really for the Yisomim. So obviously I know there's either one or two creditors. Either the estate has to pay out a ksuva, or there's a balchov. What the Brice is telling me is that when Beis Din would announce about the field of the Yisomim, not only would they announce that we're selling the field, not only would they announce the boundaries, the simanim, the value, the appraisal, they would also announce the particular type of debt for which they were liquidating the asset. So asks the Gemara, why do I need to know that? All I need to know is that there's a creditor. Why do I need to know the particular creditor? If it's a ksuva or a balchov, watch this. De'ika, the nechali b'balchov. Because I will say, some people would rather purchase a property where there's a regular creditor against it. Why? The mekel b'zuzi. Because I will say, sometimes creditors don't... A creditor often just wants to get paid. And he's willing to take even an inferior type of coinage just to go ahead and get payment for his debt. So if I'm on the market for real estate, so again, and I know that I'm going to have to satisfy a creditor from this real estate deal, so if I hear that it's a balchov, some people would rather get a balchov than a ksuva, right? Because a ksuva, an isha woman's going to want what? You know, the best type of coinage. A balchov might be willing to settle for even an inferior type of coinage, same amount but inferior type of coinage, and that appeals to me. V'ika d'nechale b'isha, others would rather take a ksuva creditor. Why? D'shakla al yad. Because a woman sometimes who's collecting your ksuva would be willing to get an installment payment. She doesn't necessarily need the full value of the ksuva up front, but rather, again, would be willing to take installments. So I'll say, interestingly enough, it appears that normally balchov, a creditor, wants to get paid out immediately. But because he wants to get paid out immediately and fully, he's willing to what? Take inferior coinage. A woman, on the other hand, a ksuva, wants to get the proper type of coinage, but what? Would be willing to get paid out over time. So when people are in the market for real estate and they know they have to pay out certain debts that are leveraged against this property, different people are willing to take on different things. So some people might be willing to take on a balchov, some people might be willing to take on a ksuva, and therefore when the Beis Din announces the parcel of property, they also announce what? The type of debt for which the property is encumbered. This way a person knows, either I can pay it out all now with a balchov, but more inferior coinage, or superior coinage, but I could pay it out over time. In order to give the full picture, the Beis Din not only announces the property, the valuation, the simanim, the boundaries, but also tells me the type of debt for which the property is encumbered. Shach, let's stop over here.